Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The government at the heart of American society has been called the Great Experiment. In other words, the Democratic Republic that governs the United States never was a sure thing. Still, most Americans have prided themselves on their freedoms, their rules of law, and systems of justice. But a new bipartisan poll suggests that American faith in that system may be slipping. Joining us now is Lindsay Lloyd of the George W. Bush Institute, one of the organizations that commissioned the poll. He manages original research at the Institute to Advance Democracy. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This is a collaborative effort. Tell us about the organizations involved and why you collectively commissioned this poll.
Sure, happy to. Well, we formed kind of an unusual coalition. The George W. Bush Institute, obviously the policy institute founded by George and Laura Bush after they left the White House. The Penn Biden Center, which is a new institution established by the former vice president, affiliated with the University of Pennsylvania. And then Freedom House, which is really the foremost human rights organization in the country, founded by co-founded by Eleanor Roosevelt and Wendell Willkie, a man her husband defeated in an election.
Mm-hmm.
So the three of us, I think, last year, just looking at the situation, were starting to have the same sort of questions, and it became, I think, a really interesting partnership, and really speaks to one of the core issues that we found, which is partisanship, polarization in America really just seems to be out of control.
But the system of government's supposed to keep that in check, right?
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And, you know, we found that the people we spoke to in both focus groups and in the survey haven't lost faith in democracy, but they do have concerns that our democracy isn't delivering what it's promising. We found, you know, very strong support. Over 80% feel it's important to live in a democracy. But they don't feel that the people that are in office these days, the institutions, are solving the nation's key problems. And we see that every day in the headlines.
Mm-hmm. You know, more than half of those polled said that the American democracy is weak, and even more, almost 7 in 10, believe it's getting weaker. And the report said these concerns go well beyond personal party preference. How do you know that? Well, how did you figure that out?
Well, so the survey that we did we surveyed 1,700 people, which is a rather large sample. And by doing that, we were able to look at breakdowns by gender, by income, by race, by political preference, and so on, and have reasonable levels of confidence in the outcome.
Women and racial minorities notably are less convinced of the merits of the system, the report said. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's one of the most interesting findings that we had. Overall, there are some troubling signs. There are also some signs of confidence and resilience in the system. But just on question after question, we found that women, particularly women of color, younger Americans, say under 35, were just not as bought into the system. And I think looking at it, at the data and just sort of extrapolating it from it, you know, you can presume, I think, that these are people who are sort of getting less from the system. We found sort of the strongest levels of confidence among those who are benefiting most. So higher income, better educated, whiter, tended to feel that things were generally okay. But if you are at the other side of the spectrum, you may have some real doubts of what is this system actually doing for me? And, you know, the three institutions really believe this is something we've got to address.
An issue that pops up on the show repeatedly is the lack of understanding of the system by Americans, the lack of understanding how it's supposed to work. Did any of that reveal itself in your survey?
Yeah, we didn't. So we didn't quiz people if they knew what the branches of government are, things like that. But there have been other projects, other surveys recently that have done that. And it's clear that there's some huge, huge knowledge gaps. What we did talk about and found a very favorable response to was this notion that we need to do more on civic education, that schools, parents, communities have a responsibility to make sure our kids know about these things. And I think there's a pretty broad consensus right now that we're not doing it well enough. So we found better than 8 in 10 people that we talked to wanted to see us invest more into this. Obviously, we're asking teachers to do a lot. They have to teach state standards. They have to teach math. We all think that STEM is more important and so forth. But we need to make some room for civics in there and figure out some new ways of doing it. There's some interesting things happening in several states, in Florida and Illinois in particular, They've got some kind of cutting edge ways of doing this, and we just think there needs to really be a national call to action on this.
You know, you said that looking at what's going on and what was going on last year inspired the genesis of this. It's a touchy subject, what's going on right now, as you well know. How are the questions written to avoid bias? So you're going into it concerned. How do you get the clarity you're seeking without the bias?
Yeah, I think, well, the one of the ways we did that is by the pollsters we employed. We went to two very well-regarded pollsters, one a Republican, one a Democrat, and the two of them worked together on this. So I think that helped us kind of skirt red herrings and bias and so forth in how the questionnaire was drafted. The other is we did a series of focus groups before. We did 10 focus groups in 5 cities around the country. And that's a way to sort of test ideas, to test the wording of questions or concepts and things like that before you go out and you actually do the telephone survey.
We're talking about Americans' views of their democratic republic, the system by which we're governed. My guest is Lindsay Lloyd, Deputy Director of Human Freedom for the George W. Bush Institute. That's one of the organizations that commissioned a set of polls, one by a Democratic pollster, one by a Republican pollster, on Americans' views on their government. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What are you going to do with the results, Lindsay?
Well, the first thing is what we're doing right now, talking about it. We've got a website which is up, which your listeners are welcome to access at democracyprojectreport.org, where they can go through all of the data. We posted what the pollsters call the crosstab. So if you want to go in and see how white women over 50 felt about question number 2, you can do that. Free of charge. So we're talking about it on forums like this and elsewhere. We're planning a series of events over the next month or so to meet with different groups in Washington and elsewhere. And this fall, we're hoping to start a series of conversations on college campuses around the country to talk with students, with younger people in particular, because we see that as being one of the real key gaps, one of the key audiences here to connect with. And then in terms of follow-on work, I think each of the three institutions is evaluating that right now. We at the Bush Center have a real strong interest in the international aspect of this poll. We talk to people about how they feel about American support for democracy and human rights around the world. It's obviously kind of something that's very close to President Bush's heart. So that's something we're exploring. And then again, the civic education, civic engagement angle is something that we want to take a deeper look at.
As you said, Americans overwhelmingly still support the system or the concept of democracy and think it's important to keep it. But this isn't the first time that Americans have been concerned about the strength of the system.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, we're very, very fortunate that we have a system that's able to make corrections. We have a brilliantly inspired constitution, but the constitution didn't include everyone when it was drafted. And over time, we adjusted, we learned, we grew, we got better as a country by bringing racial minorities and women and others into the system that were excluded from it. So we have a system that allows us to adapt. You're right. We've certainly faced, very divisive, challenging times in the past. You think of the Civil War, you think of Vietnam, Watergate, things like that. But, one thing that I think is very different is how instant the news is, how people react so quickly. We've lost sort of that shared national dialogue that we had in the day when everybody was watching one of the same 3 network newscasts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People sort of self-select where they get their news from. They tune out those they disagree with, and that I think that's sort of sharpened the divides that are present in our country.
8 in 10 Americans think that the influence of money in politics is getting worse. Notably, we've just heard about the announcement of the retirement of Justice Kennedy, who wrote the majority
Citizens
opinion
United. Mm-hmm.
in Citizens United, which has changed the landscape incredibly in just a few years. That's not going to change back anytime soon, if ever.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it did come through very strongly. And this was one of those issues where there really was very little partisan difference or racial difference or gender difference, really across the board. people feel that the influence in money is too great. There are no easy solutions here. We did focus groups in Indianapolis, among other places, and the sort of language that the focus group participants were using were that, you know, I, as an ordinary citizen, don't have access to my senator or my congressman or my governor. They only listen to the people who are giving them big campaign contributions. And right or wrong, that's the perception that's out there, and that's something I think we need to take a serious look at. How do you combat it and stay within the court's decision that essentially money equals speech in politics? It's very, very tricky.
Is that connected then with the partisan divide when people were asked to pick whether America is in real danger of becoming a non-democratic authoritarian country or no real danger? The report said that about half said there's a real danger. Mm-hmm. But about almost 60% of self-identified Democrats said the danger is real, but only 37% of Republicans did.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think if we had done this poll 3 or 4 years ago when we had a Democratic president, mm-hmm. we probably would have seen those numbers reversed. But it's, you know, I think anytime you have more than half the population saying, yes, there's a risk that our democracy, could be in jeopardy, that's something to take very, very seriously. If people really see those signs and feel that threat is there, it's a call to action on behalf of lawmakers and the general public. We did see, though, that people also have a lot of enthusiasm and recognize that more and more people are becoming politically active, from whatever political position. And you can just see that anecdotally over the last year in terms of voting, in terms of, getting out and signing petitions or writing letters to the editor, or, you know, any of the things that people can do to be active in their society. We're seeing more of that. That's a good thing, and people recognize that.
Is it clear, you know, you've made reference to the threat of the democracy falling apart. Is it clear that everybody sees that as a threat, a pejorative, like this would be a negative thing? Or do some people think it would not be bad to be more authoritarian?
Yeah. So we didn't find that in our survey. There mm-hmm. have been other surveys out there which suggested that a minority of people would be open to other forms of government. But again, in our survey, it came back pretty clearly that, 8 in 10 said, absolutely important to be in a democracy or important to be living in a democracy. So we didn't see that openness there.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime I think you have a system that doesn't seem to be able to work, the longer that goes on, the greater the risks are.
I'm curious about your focus groups and if mm-hmm. you sussed out anything that didn't come up in the polling, but is interest in something you're going to pursue from the focus groups?
Yeah, well, again, a couple of things. This notion of the importance of civic education came mm-hmm. out really clearly. Yeah. One of the groups we did was of educators out in Arizona, and that we heard the teachers basically recognizing that they wanted to do this, they needed to do it, but also saying, we don't have the time to do it, given all the other mandates that the state and the school district puts on us. And it shouldn't be a responsibility just for the schools. It's something that parents need to do. It's something that civic organizations need to do as well. The other thing I think that came out in an interesting way in the focus groups was this notion of race and how people perceive things. Almost all of the groups that we had were mixed race conversations. And we just heard some very, very different perspectives from whites and from African Americans on the same issues. There's a question in there about whether race relations are improving or getting worse in this country. And, whites said, they're getting better. African Americans and other minorities said, no, not quite. We don't perceive it quite the same way. So, I think those conversations were really, really interesting.
Lindsay Lloyd, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Sure. It's my pleasure.
Lindsay Lloyd is Deputy Director of Human Freedom for the George W. Bush Institute, which with a couple other organizations has commissioned two polls. They don't bode well, but they do inform about Americans' views about their Democratic Republic and its survival. We're going to talk about this more with some political scientists, so stay with us. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A recently released report shows that a majority of Americans feel unsure about the stability and influence of our Democratic Republic. At his inauguration, President Donald Trump touched on something most Americans are concerned about: who or what is controlling the politics.
For too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost.
According to this report, 8 in 10 Americans think the influence of money in politics is getting worse. Joining us now is Paul Beck, political scientist at Ohio State. And welcome to the show, Paul.
Good to be with you, Ann.
Also by phone, Michael Neblo, an OSU associate professor in political science. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here, Ann.
Mike, are the results of this report anything new or surprising when you think about it?
Well, they're not deeply new in that we were trending in this direction, but the results are more extreme than they have been in the past for questions along this line, these lines. So I would say that the concerns are heightening, not that they're brand new.
You know, Paul Beck, historically, when there's this much concern over the system of government, what do we know about whether that's a good thing for that form of government, that people are concerned about its survival?
Well, one would hope that when there is dysfunctionality in the political system and people perceive that and provide less support for the institutions as a result of that, that there would be reform efforts and they would be fueled by this kind of public sentiment. That's happened a good deal of time. Mm-hmm. If you think of the populist era and the progressive era in the United States a century or so ago, it happened then. It happened in the 1930s. There are also some dire consequences, where partisan polarization, and which lies at the heart of a lot of this, becomes so extreme that each side is fighting with the other, not listening to the other. In Weimar Germany and the rise of course, the Nazis in the 1930s, you had a situation where there was warfare in the streets. And that ended up with the rise of Hitler and the domination of Hitler in Germany. So there's that really dire consequence. And one worries a lot about that.
Hmm. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Half of Americans think our nation's democracy is in danger. A recent report from the Freedom House, George W. Bush Institute, and the University of Pennsylvania's Biden Center also found that a majority of Americans think democracy is weak. What do you think? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. With us by phone, OSU Associate Professor of Political Scientist Michael Neblo, and with me in the studio, Paul Beck, OSU Political Scientist as well. What do you think? You can also check out our Facebook page and pose your questions or your comments there. Paul and I talked about this before we went on the air, Mike. I give you a chance to weigh in. Let's talk about this, that notably this collaboration engaged two pollsters, a Republican and a Democratic pollster, which is good. That's interesting and good. But I feel like there's a whole nother thing out there going on, which is why so many missed the election of 2016, misinterpreted it, misdiagnosed it at the outset. Do you think just doing a Democrat and Republican pollster is enough these days?
Well, I certainly think it helps. Having that sort mm-hmm. of collaboration helps to offset the biases that can creep in. I think mostly inadvertent. The high-quality polling houses try to play it straight. It doesn't really behoove them to give the people that they're working for bad information if that information is going to, you know, drop on the candidates' heads later. But there are house effects. But even the aggregators, so there are a couple of Real Clear Politics, mm-hmm. 538, and some other websites, take all of the polling firms and sort of weight them to come up with a sort of consensus estimate. Even those were off. So I'm not sure it's specifically collaboration between Republicans and Democrats in the polling. My own hunch, and I don't have strong evidence on this, but my own hunch is that there were a fair few people who were shy about being public about their support for President Trump or then Mr. Trump, and that's why we were off a little bit. But that's conjecture.
Mm-hmm. And the shyness has all gone away, Paul Beck?
Well, I would add to what Mike has said that there were a lot of people in 2016, November of 2016, who made up their minds at the very end of the campaign. And there's a lot of movement over the weekend before the election and maybe even on Election Day itself. And, of course, the polls can't pick that up. They are reporting typically after the election if they've done their polling during that period. So I think the polls are reasonably accurate. Mike is exactly right in saying that what we should look at is not the result of a single poll, but the correlation among polls. And if one poll is really out of kilter with the others, we should be suspect about it. And that can happen and has happened in the past. But the averages that the aggregators produce tend to be pretty accurate, though there are some exceptions, obviously.
Biba in Columbus, did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
My comment was that I feel like I, as well as a lot of my peers, like millennial voters, feel like the democracy is weak right now because all these entities that we were taught about are kind of just collapsing in the form of really big decisions like Roe versus Wade. I mean, if President Trump is able to put on two Supreme Court justices and that just erodes away all of the work that Planned Parenthood has done and previous legislation has done, I mean, it's almost like, so what can it stop, you know? Or what is the point of having our democracy if it doesn't safeguard these ideals that actually have already been put in place?
Paul Beck?
Well, there are two sides, actually, to these attitudes about confidence in institutions. One is kind of a partisan side. People tend to have less confidence in the institutions that are controlled by the other party. And you see that in polls over time. It's not a big effect, but it's certainly there. And then there is the overall dysfunctionality of the institutions. We watch a Congress that can't really seem to come to any kind of majority, any kind of legislation on key issues. Or we see a Congress, in the case of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, that basically rolls back what was done by a preceding president. In the case of the Bush tax cuts, rolls back what was done by a preceding president. So there's this back and forth and dysfunctionality. I think people looking at all of this, and certainly I would include myself among them, perceive this dysfunctionality in our institutions and are bothered by it and think that it's a detriment to the operations of democracy.
Michael Neblo?
Yeah, so I think that there are two issues going on here. One is the sort of considerations that Paul Beck just raised. Another one is there's sort of a tension, and this really came out in the Democracy Project poll, between democracy and majorities and the standard operation of our political institutions and rights and constraints on democratic majorities. And in political theory, that, you know, the liberal side of liberal democracy, not liberal in the sense of the left wing of the Democratic Party, but liberal in the sense of liberal rights. And the peculiarity on that is that the things that people most thought were crucial to democracy, equal rights regarding race, religion, and beliefs, freedom of speech, rule of law, freedom of religion, checks and balances, separation of powers, those are all actually checks against what democratic majorities in the normal apparatus of government can do. And I think that the caller was raising concerns about the erosion of those sorts of protections and the stability of our institutions because we have united government. Both chambers of Congress, the president, are controlled by one party, and the Supreme Court very soon is likely to be. And so I think that's related to the functioning of democracy, but it's really the checks on democratic majorities that the caller was raising concerns about.
Biba, thanks for that call. Rich in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Rich.
Hi, I think like most people, I am concerned about how it seems that democracy is eroding. With that said, though, I think there's certain points in history, certainly if you look pre-Civil War, where Congress was way more dysfunctional than it is now. And also when you factor in the fact
that... Yeah, but we solved that with the Civil War.
Well, fair enough, fair enough. But there have been other points other than that. Also, if you look when this country was founded, only about 9% of the people who lived here could actually vote.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like, you know, you had to be white, male, 21, and a landowner to vote. And it seems like we keep, you know, the arc is to, over time, is to get more people voting. And that's when I get frustrated about how things are going, or that I see democracy being, you know, like Citizens United, where I feel like being, we're turning into more of an oligarchy. I try to remind myself that, you know, looking at the longer view of our history. And that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Okay, Rich, thanks a lot. Paul Beck, the longer arc of history is in favor.
Well, here's a very good point, mm-hmm. that a democratic country like the United States has been resilient over time. And we've had other episodes where democracy and its fundamentals have been challenged, certainly in terms of minority rights. And, of course, minorities are different from time to time. Some minorities are better protected than others. And so we have to bear that in mind. The larger point I would like to raise is the question of, okay, how does democracy erode in a country?
And what does it look like?
What does it look like, and what are its causes? And it can erode in terms of public attitudes, obviously, and that's what this poll reflects. But it can also erode in terms of elite actions that are not countered. And I think the real worry today is that. And you see this in terms of the effects that leaders have. Leaders who take actions or voice statements that are not necessarily democratic statements, do their followers on that partisan side come to agree with them?
And Such as?
Well, I think of this is not quite an on target, but attitudes towards Putin and Russia. Among Republicans, they have basically reversed over the last 2 years.
Right.
That's a leadership effect.
Mm-hmm.
What President Trump has done, I think, by being more positive about Putin and more positive about relations with Russia, is that he's changed the minds of a lot of Republicans. Now, if you carry this over to attitudes towards democracy, people who are coming to the borders, you again can have voters who say, well, you know, normally I wouldn't approve of that, but it's probably okay if our government does that. And that can occur on both sides. There's a phenomenon that people like Mike Nebelo and I talk about called partisan motivated reasoning, where we start with our partisanship and then we reason from that. Our positions on issues really have to do with what party we favor. And unfortunately and regrettably, there are a lot of Americans who reason that way.
Well, Michael Nebelo, it's been interesting in the last year or so when there have been surveys of people and polling of people where they put a statement out there and ask people to respond to it. And they say they think it's awesome. It's great. You know, one group or another. And it turns out to be a statement from the leader of the opposing party. They like the ideal of it, but if they don't know who it's coming from, that changes things.
Yeah. So certainly Paul is right. There is reasoning from party, and we take cues from our party leaders. And at a certain level, that's okay, I think, in that the political world is very complex. Even members of Congress can't really dig in on all of the legislation that they have before them,
mm-hmm.
and they take cues from their party leaders too. So there's nothing necessarily wrong with average citizens trying to orient themselves via the people that they trust. That said, my bigger worry, and this is echoing something that the caller had said, is not so much polarization, in that I think it's okay if the parties disagree and disagree vigorously. My worry is that we are moving toward a situation where opponents are becoming enemies. It's okay in a democracy for there to be conflict, for there to be opponents, and to have a loyal opposition trying to fight back against what the people in power are doing. But when that becomes enemies, people who are illegitimate and need to be defeated or marginalized, that to me is the real danger to democracy, that there's a certain amount of civic friendship and civic trust mm-hmm. that's necessary, even when we sharply disagree about policy. And my worry is that we've really accelerated moving from being opponents to enemies. And that is a big part of what citizens are picking up on, not so much polarization itself in terms of policies, but a hostile attitude towards opposition and treating others like they were enemies rather than simply people who disagree with us.
Johnny in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Johnny.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I just wanted to comment on some of the things that have just been said. First of all, I agree in part with what's been said about polarization and how people look towards party leaders to take their cues on political ideas and things like that. Mm-hmm. What bothers me, though, is that I think a lot of people will, to get kind of the approval of, you know, society and whatnot, and pollsters, when they're asked these questions, when they're asked about their approval of American democracy and their belief in it, they will say that they believe in it because that's kind of the answer that they believe they're supposed to give. But when they're confronted with things that are blatantly unconstitutional or actions that they wouldn't approve from the opposing party, then they might, you know, waffle a little bit. And I guess what I'm afraid of in terms of American democracy is not necessarily polarization or people having different views, but people forgetting or not respecting democratic norms in favor of trying to win and having their side win. So they'll be perfectly acceptable of, you know, their political party doing unconstitutional, undemocratic things, as long as it means that they get to, you know, put a point on the board. So that's what worries me personally about American democracy going forward.
Thank you, Johnny. Sounds like an action speak louder than words sort of an observation.
Well, I think this observation is really on target, mm-hmm. that there are things that we may abide by or allow to happen just because they are pushed forward by our side. And there's a danger in that. There's an erosion of norms and even rules and even laws to some degree as a result of that. And we've seen some of that, you know, not just in the last 2 years. I think this goes far deeper than that. And we've seen over the last couple of decades, certainly in the Congress, a change in how Congress operates. It is a less collegial body mm-hmm. than it was 20 and 30 years ago.
And that's being replicated in state houses across the country as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's a real problem. And it goes back to what Mike Nepos said, and that is that when your opponents become enemies or become the devil, then it's very hard to have a dialogue that can come to any kind of compromise solution. And when compromise itself is denigrated, then we have a defeat of the very essence of democracy, is having disagreement over policy issues, and the democratic process is supposed to work out those disagreements.
We're going to continue our conversation. That is OSU political scientist Paul Beck, also with us by phone, OSU Associate Professor of Political Science Michael Neblo. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. We're talking about the future of our democracy and to what extent it depends on our faith in that democratic republic that governs our country. So you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Half of Americans fear democracy is going to be replaced by an undemocratic, authoritarian regime. This fear transcends political parties, race, and gender. That's according to a recently released report commissioned by the George W. Bush Institute, Freedom House, and the University of Pennsylvania Biden Center. At a Yale commencement speech, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton expressed this feeling of concern.
I still think about the 2016 election. I still regret the mistakes I made. I still think, though, that understanding what happened in such a weird and wild election in American history will help us defend our democracy in the future. Whether you're right, left, center, Republican, Democrat, independent, vegetarian, whatever. We all have a stake in that. So today, as a person, I'm okay, but as an American, I'm concerned.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about what this fear for the stability of our democracy and concern over influence means going forward. Still with us, Paul Beck, OSU political scientist, and also by phone, OSU political scientist Michael Neblo. We welcome your insights, listeners. Give us a call. Tell us what you think. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If Americans are uneasy or unsure about our democracy, what sort of influence does that play at the polls on Election Day, Michael Neblo? What do we know about how turnout is affected by our faith in our form of government?
That's a good question. I'm not sure we actually know all that much about that particular question. If people are worried that the other side is tearing down democracy, they'll show up. So in one sense, I think that this is likely to motivate both sides, though my hunch is that it's even more motivating for Democrats because they're almost entirely out of power.
Mm-hmm.
There is some evidence to suggest that just this dissatisfaction with the system can motivate some participation for some people. But there's actually a lot of evidence, even some of my own work, we show that a lot of non-participation is because people think that the system is rigged and that their participation won't make a difference. So it can actually be demobilizing if people think that democracy is failing. That might seem like a foolish response to withdraw precisely when the Republic needs more engagement.
Mm-hmm.
But if people think that it's a rigged game and they've got nothing that they can do about it, they're not going to bother to put in the time. And that's something that worries me greatly.
Yeah, I mean, right, Paul Beck. I mean, how long have we been hearing people say my vote doesn't count when we know it does?
Well, I think there are a lot of people who are, the technical term would be, alienated from the political system, disillusioned with it, and they think no matter what I think, it doesn't matter because the system is rigged, and you know, one worries about that. The other thing that I think that it can motivate people to do is take a chance on somebody who's going to shake up the system.
As in a la New York City?
Yes. And we saw this in 2016, really on both sides of the aisle, that both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump were anti-establishment candidates. Both of them were saying to voters, we're really dissatisfied with what's going on. And a lot of voters were saying, so are we. And you should take a chance on us, those candidates were saying. And a lot of voters did take a chance on them. So there is that kind of response as well. And where it transitions from kind of giving up on the system and not voting into being able to accept what could be extreme alternatives to shake up the system is kind of hard to pin down. But it, you know, we've seen this in our lifetimes happen.
Dee in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dee.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, out of the lens of a mother of a teenage boy of color, there's a lack of dwindling of the democracy because of transparency. People are not seeing, and it's not transparent of how we're going about the process. Many feel marginalized and disenfranchised, and I know you talked about that earlier, but we can't agree to disagree and have everybody have a seat at the table for decision making. So there's decision making that's going on that's not supported by facts. And because of the lack of transparency, it's almost like if you're doing something I don't like, I'm just going to do an executive order. And so from the standpoint of now, we're just looking at that's how the country is going to be run. By just doing executive orders.
I think that not just executive order, but how much work gets done behind the scenes in Congress has become unreal. I mean, they roll out these gigantic pieces of legislation that have nobody even knows what's in them. They don't even know what's in them. You know, Michael Neblo, I mean, I think Dee's kind of makes a great point. A logical person is going to say, what are you hiding?
That's right. And this is a very long-term trend. This is something I'm very interested in. Basically, since 1994, there has been a real dollar reduction in the amount of money that congressional offices, individual congressional offices have, their resources. And in the meantime, there's been an almost tenfold increase in incoming communication. And so average offices are completely overwhelmed. You're right that even members of Congress don't know what are in these bills, and they're just trying to keep their heads above water. And this has created a real shift of power to the leadership and the think tanks, because individual sort of backbench regular congressional offices no longer have the capacity to really deliberate themselves about pending legislation, much less meaningfully consult their constituents. And I think that's a huge problem. It's something that's related to my own research and reform efforts. I engage with congressional offices and am trying to help this problem. But I think you're right. Dee puts her finger on a crucial problem, and the solutions are tricky.
Dee, thanks for that call. I want to turn to Stephen now in Columbus. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Yes, and I got in late, so hopefully this hasn't been discussed before. Current issue of the Atlantic Monthly had an interesting article showing the bell curves of the Republicans, bell curves of the Democrats over time, a couple points in time, and it shows that the beliefs of the Democratic electorate has moved to the left, and the Republicans have moved to the right, so there's much less overlap in the middle.
Right.
And the whole point of that article was that it's showing why the actual people getting nominated are more extreme, because the parties have moved over, but there's much less cohesion or overlap in the middle for the swing voters to elect somebody. And I don't know if either of your analysts have seen that article yet, but it's a very good analysis.
Right. I mean, Stephen, you're bringing up something that's kind of the function of this issue of gerrymandering in the United States, is it not, Paul Beck?
Well, there are a lot of things going on here. One is that more and more members of Congress over the last 20 or 30 years have come from one-party districts, which means that who serves that district is basically decided in the primaries. And then you have action at the extreme ends of either party. And you think of the New York case from Tuesday,
where the somebody congressional primary.
Yeah, where somebody primaries a sitting member of Congress and defeats them.
Apparently, a powerful member of Congress,
of Congress, and defeats them because they're maybe not in this case liberal enough, or in the case of some others, not conservative enough. So that indeed is happening. If you look at Congress, by the way, and look at roll call votes in Congress, there is no longer anyone in the middle, no longer anyone who votes on a fair amount of time or a fair amount of bills with the other side. And so you have this extreme polarization that is basically represented in the electorate as well. Now, there are a lot of people who get left out who are not partisans. And what happens to them is, in many cases, they feel alienated. They feel that they don't really have a role in the political system, and so they withdraw. And that, of course, is not a good thing either.
Hmm. Michael Neblo?
Yes. So there's no doubt that there is more polarization in the Congress itself. There is some disagreement in political science as to how far that's reflected in the electorate. especially if you look at policies. If you look at party identification, there's a certain amount of truth to that. But as Paul said or suggested, a lot of the apparent polarization in the electorate is people in the middle just saying, you know what, I'm not going to consider myself a Democrat anymore, or I'm not going to consider myself a Republican anymore. But if you look at issue by issue, it's not clear that we're really polarized much more in the electorate than we were before. And that's why I'm going back to this theme that it, in my own view, and this is controversial, is that polarization itself is not necessarily a bad thing. That part of the reason you have no overlap in the Congress anymore is that the conservative Democrats from the South are now Republicans, and they didn't really quite fit into the Democratic Party all that well anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, liberal Northeastern Republicans mm-hmm. are now Democrats. And there's lots of systems in the world where there's sharp disagreements between the parties and not a lot of overlap and a lot of party discipline, and they get on just fine. My big worry is this notion of opponents becoming enemies. And I don't think that that's an inevitable consequence of partisan sorting.
Yeah, you know, I remember when I was covering the State House 30 years ago, I at first thought, why are these guys going out to the bar every night? They fight all day on the floor and then they drink all night. And I look back and think those are the halcyon days, weren't they? They actually got things done. Jim and Powell, we only have about a minute left. I wanted to squeeze you in. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that anytime that we do an us versus them, we are always looking at that we're completely separated. And then morality is based on what we think is best for us. So anytime that we are looking at that, we got to stop looking at it that way and say what's best for we instead of what's best for me.
And the question is that what's happening in our state houses and in Congress. Jim, thanks a lot for that call. Paul Beck, I mean, parting thoughts. We embark on, you know, the summer before another election cycle that's going to be interesting again.
Oh, it's going to be a very, very partisan time over a whole variety of issues. And that's the era that we're in. By the way, I've been involved in this project for many years that studies electorates in other countries, including the United States. And we are the most partisan divided electorate in the democratic world.
Mm. Michael Neblo, just about a half a minute left.
So the short version is I want to end on a note of hope, which is I don't think that this is inevitable. I think that a lot of what we're seeing is a function of how we've arranged our institutions and practices. And I think that there are reform opportunities, and I have evidence for this, that if you put people into a different context, they behave very differently. And when I say people, I mean both citizens and elected officials. And that we really need to start thinking hard rather than just bemoaning the situation we find ourselves in. We should light a candle rather than just curse the darkness.
Michael Neblo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Also, Paul Beck, thanks to you as well. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ann.
It's Michael Neblo and Paul Beck, two OSU political scientists. We'll have a link to that report on the polling of Americans. Well over 50% think there's a problem with our Democratic Republic. So check that out at WOSU.org/allsides. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.